It's past 10 o'clock on a Wednesday morning on the Dave Charles Show, brought to you proudly by Bidvest McCarthy Toyota Bolito. And my special guest for the morning, a musician of note, no less. We wouldn't have anything less than a musician of note on this show. It's one of the kickstands. Gary Nixon is in the house. Now, Gary, I just want to drop your mic down a little bit because, you know, we record these things, and if we can't see your face, people send me complaints to say, what are you recording microphones here? Well, it is. It's a live radio show, folks. And on part of that exercise, we actually recorded as well on video so that we can do what they call a bit of a vodcast as well as a podcast. So you're covered in every respect. The kickstands, wow. For listeners just discovering you, who are the kickstands and how did you come together?
Started in about 2009, straight out of varsity, as more of just like a hobby kind of killing time, really, before we started working. And then, kind of just took off over a period of 2 or 3 years, and we kind of carried on snowballing.
Okay. There's always a story behind the name. So what is that?
It's very arbitrary. Rudy, the guy I started the kickstands with, he was really into biking. And it was in 2010, I think, beginning of 2010 when the World Cup started. We got asked to perform at the FIFA fan park, and we needed a name for them to publish, but we needed it ASAP. So they phoned Rudy, and Rudy said, oh, the kickstands. You know, it's not going to stick. It's fine. Whatever.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's not a very exciting story behind it, but, yeah, it kind of stuck.
Yeah, it certainly did. If you have to describe your sound in one sentence, what would it be?
I'd say a mixture between folk, blues, indie, with a singer-songwriter influence, like Jack Johnson, mixed with some technical guitar work. That kind of vibe, yeah.
Now, clearly, the early days, you say you were at university, you had a bit of an association that became a band. But what was the moment you realized that this sound actually could be quite valuable?
Well, when we started jamming, we were always inclined to play acoustic guitar. At the time, around 2010, 2011, that whole music genre, the folk scene with like Mumford & Sons, and that sound was quite popular. And I think we were just lucky enough to fit into that as it was becoming quite a popular genre worldwide. And because we were proficient in it and we loved jamming, we elevated quickly in a social setting, if that makes sense. Yeah. So, that's kind of how we became on people's tongues, I suppose.
Yeah. But every band has its what they call grind phase. Hard. Yes. What was it like for yours?
We're still grinding. It never stops. We love performing. We love live music. And that's why we do it so often. I mean, we also do it for a living, of course. But we perform and we play. In the beginning, we were playing loads of gigs. Famously, this one gig was in a Mansum Toti. We were getting about $500 every Tuesday. And I think they were just taking a bit of pity on us because we would arrive at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a random Tuesday afternoon, a place called Old Mecca, I think it was. And there was always construction going on, and there was no one ever there. So we used it as a rehearsal, but it was soul-destroying because we didn't understand why we were there. So I suppose in terms of the grind, that was one gig that will stand out as something that that we were confused about. You know, like, well, is this it? You know.
And then what was the biggest turning point for you?
I would say East Coast Radio had this Be the Band competition. And everyone had to submit a video and whatnot. And then you got to open for East Coast, the Big Day Out or so, whatever. I can't remember what it was actually called, but that gave us a lot of traction in terms of radio presence and social media presence, because I mean social media was still kind of in its infancy then, you know, not as big as it is now. So it kind of launched us into, okay, this is a reputable act, you know, they've got something to offer, like, yeah,
because it's not easy to break in. But you guys have done it, and you're doing it successfully. And this is the Kickstands on the Dave Charles Show on 88 FM. Such a catchy sound. That is the Kickstands and a tune called Back to Paradise, and I'm in conversation with Gary Nixon of the Kickstands. Nice that you are on the show this morning.
Thanks, Dave.
Ahead of your big gig at Splashy tomorrow, and even bigger gig at the Lifestyle Center today.
Yes, 100%.
which is very exciting because you're around the corner live, and if you are listening to this and would like to see the Kickstands, it's your golden opportunity. You can see them at the Lifestyle Center absolutely free, which is a win, because if you're going to go and check them at Splashy, it's going to cost you a lot of money. So let's talk about this. When you think about the local music scene, because it's clearly not an easy road being a musician in South Africa and making a living out of that. Is it getting easier or harder, do you think, for bands to break into the South African music scene?
I would say a bit harder. You know, from everyone has their own opinion and view on things, but it does take, obviously, a lot of passion, talent, and all the necessary things that would take anything to excel in. But it takes a bit of cash to get in. And if that's someone sponsoring you, helping you, signing you, or something like that, to break through and market yourself properly, to get great recordings done costs quite a bit of cash. We are lucky in this day and age that if you are very good at social media and you're charismatic and you're talented and you're passionate in your music, you can do that without spending money. But when it comes to getting a high value production in with your music and a producer to get on board that knows your sound, that does cost a bit of cash. Things are more accessible, but there's also a lot of competition out there. There's a lot of there's a lot of hoops to jump through, and you got to be willing to travel a lot. It's like nonstop. If you get big, it's nonstop. Yeah.
Are there any artists that you can think of, South African artists, that in your opinion deserve more attention?
I would say, I mean, Bushle is, I love him. He's an amazing musician, but he's got a lot of attention. I'm trying to think of someone that's kind of flying underground. The Freddie L Band in Cape Town. They've written some amazing songs.
Are they in Cape Town now?
Yeah, they've moved to Cape Town, yeah. The three guys, they're writing and producing some real crackers, and I think they deserve a lot more recognition. In the last few months, they've been pushing hard. And their sound is really good. It's really, really good, yeah.
Do you think the Cape Town music scene is more vibrant than the scene up in...
No, I wouldn't say so, hey. I would say, from my experience, there's a lot more live music in KZN, hands down. Cape Town is a different animal. Because, like, in KZN, there are actually quite a lot of places around. I mean, it's a massive province as well. But there's a lot of places doing live music. And Cape Town, not so much. Cape Town's more of a Afro house vibey sunset kind of like DJ vibe. There is obviously space for live music there, and it is amazing. I'm not saying there's not.
Don't you find that in Cape Town there are places that encourage people to come and listen to the music, which is actually quite cool if you're a musician?
Yes.
Working, I mean, I think people generally don't fully understand what it's like to be a musician, putting your heart and soul in front of them with an acoustic guitar and a voice, giving it your all. You're exposed, you're naked out there. And sometimes you get a response that is marvelous and makes it all worthwhile. But South African audiences very often think it's fine to chat the way through your set, not to really pay attention at all.
Yeah, I'm used to that now.
Isn't that awful?
I view KZN as more of like a background entertainment live music area, whereas Cape Town do offer proper, you know, like there's those folk places in Musenberg area. There's like two or three of them, I think, near Simonstown, that zone. And then there's Cafe Rue, and I can count five
the
on my one.
Alma Cafe.
Yeah, Alma Cafe, beautiful. Oh, no. And those are all quiet, sit down,
they tell you as an audience, I listen.
Yeah.
You know, these are musicians that deserve your respect and attention. When they're playing, you shut up.
Yeah.
Order your drinks and stuff now, and then listen to the show.
That doesn't exist.
And I think that is absolutely cool.
Yeah.
Because it is so frustrating. And I know, my heart breaks for you guys because you're really good. I'm talking about clearly the kickstands, but good musicians in general.
Yes, sure.
That appear live in front of a group of folk. Now, surely here at the Lifestyle Center, it's not an audience per se. It's just happy shoppers.
It's entertainment.
So it's adding a bit of a vibe, and you don't mind that, do you?
No. I think we've gotten used to it. We have our moments where we do have showcase shows in particular.
But don't you find it's quite awful when someone really does like you, and then they sit in the front and they clap, and it's like one person clapping, and you think, oh, please. It's like a consolation.
Just make eye contact and say, thanks, man. Thanks very much.
Do you like that, or do you have to encourage people not to do that?
No, I don't. For me, it's... You know, everyone must do what they feel comfortable doing. You know, as long as you're not encroaching on anyone else's vibe, it's totally chilled. I think I'm used to being a background musician, and then I love when I get a gap to actually showcase our set, you know.
Now, I want to ask you a question that I think is a burning issue. A lot of musicians that write and perform their own tunes, certainly, you're a case in point, are reluctant to play covers because, my music is... What is your view there?
So, we play a lot of cover gigs. We do a lot of them. I would say probably about 60 to 70% of our gigs every month are cover-driven gigs. We throw in our originals every now and again. But, for weddings, corporates, that's where we make bank, you know. And we are very happy to do that. And then we get a chance to showcase our original material when we put on our own show, when we play at Splashy Fen or Beats in the Bush or any of these epic festivals around KZN. We get to showcase our originality and our purpose of why we do this. You know?
And clearly you do it very well. I just, for those that don't know what a cover is someone else's song that you then are doing a version of.
Yeah.
And I think there's a kind of misunderstanding among some purists that, in a sense, is quite sad, because if you appear in front of an audience that doesn't really know you from Adam, and you're trying to break in with your music that they don't know from a bar of soap, there's no connection initially.
No, exactly.
So how do you win over the house?
Yeah.
Surely it is to take music that they are already familiar with, give it your own spin if necessary, but give them what they know and love, and you're doing it your way that makes them know and love you, so that they'll listen to your original tune. And is that the reason?
That's exactly it. Yeah, relatable. Humans are relatable people. They're relatable beings. So you got to kind of spark a bit of confidence in yourself through something that they're familiar with.
Indeed, I've got another Kickstands hit on the playlist here. It's called Hold On. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, Hold On was written when I moved to Durban from Scottsboro.
Big move.
Well, it was then. It's just a song of coming of age and growing up a little bit. So, yeah.
Another real cracker from the Kickstands. Tune called Hold On. And I'm in conversation with the man who wrote that song and many other fabulous Kickstand hits. His name is Gary Nixon, and my very special guest on the Dave Charles Show this morning. Gary, talking about writing, what comes first generally? Is it the lyrics or the little hook, the riff, the vibe? What is it?
Yeah, I think the melody, we sit and jam. Well, I sit and jam every now and again and between gigs, a nice riff will come into my head, a chord progression, and I'll have a melody, and I'll kind of hum it, and I'll feel something that emotes from that rhythm and melody, and then the lyrics will kind of flow, and then I'll sit and write a little bit.
And how do you remember? Because it comes, and then I know that there's apps that you can get now that you sing into, and that does it, and there's a whole lot of AI stuff. Doesn't that drive you mental if someone does an AI tune and tries to pass it off as their own?
Oh yes, yeah. It's getting harder to tell though, because they're getting pretty good. But
the AI is getting excellent, but you can't pass it off as yourself because it doesn't sound like
exactly.
You.
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't put my parameters into an AI and it sound like us, you know. But in terms of writing your own melody, I think there'll always be there'll never not be room for live music, is what I'm saying. I think AI will take over in terms of songwriting, definitely. I mean, it already is. But, you know, you can't have someone jamming live and emulate that with AI. Well, not yet.
It's an interesting conundrum because you're quite right. There is listening music, there is background music, there is Muzak that just plays in the lift or in the restaurant or somewhere to create some kind of atmosphere, whatever that might be. But there's nothing quite as exciting as a good live performance. And I say this sincerely because people across the board are responding to experiences and a special place and time where experience comes together. You have an atmosphere that is electric, the music is cooking, and there's a kind of almost chemistry between the artist that's performing and the audience that's
absolutely
listening. It feeds into this wonderful there's nothing quite to
replace. No, that's, you've nailed it. That's exactly the definition of attending an amazing live act that makes you feel something. Yeah. You know, that's why there's huge concerts and where people get together and experience that thing collectively.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of it, yeah.
Talking of which, you're appearing, we mentioned it in the beginning of our conversation, you're appearing at the Lifestyle Center.
Yes.
After your
today,
conversation here.
Half past 12, we'll start jamming.
12:30 at the market, is it?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So there it is, an opportunity to come and hear the good live music, the kickstands, absolutely free. I can't imagine a better experience. But they're also performing at Splashy Fen, which has become probably the premier festival of its kind in the country. Is it difficult to get accepted now?
Yeah, I think, I don't think, you have to, I suppose there's criteria, you know, you have to be good at your craft, first of all, have a little bit of a following, unless you just break out the gates and have brilliant live recordings of what you do, so it can prove to the organizers that you want a pedestal to step off of.
Do they come to you and approach you, or do you approach...
No, you have to apply. Everyone has to apply. Okay. I think if you're Jeremy Loops or Goldfish, I don't think you have to apply. I think they'll go to you. But
don't you find it... Now, here's a bit of a conundrum that I think we've created for ourselves in this country. I suppose every country has a similar problem. Back in the day, you had channels to the market. Mostly it was radio play. If you got on Five, for example, my stomping ground back in the day, you became, if you were popular and you climbed the charts, you became a commodity that impresarios could book and say, if I book you, I know
people
I'm going to have a house. Sure, because you're established. And there are still a few of those memories hanging on, the Mango Groove type.
Yes,
And that's kind of become a bit nostalgia-driven, but it's still there. There are very few, though.
Yes.
Very few. No more hotlines, no more Johnny Clegg's Avoga, Juluga, none of that.
Yeah.
It's becoming a lot more difficult to establish brands that will attract audiences.
Yes.
How are you going to go about building your brand?
Well, we are more... I guess our model is more just on the ground, guerrilla. We play so many gigs. And, you know, our social media presence is okay. It could be much better, which I think that's probably we're going to work on in this year and going forward. It's just becoming a little bit more present on social media. But how we get most of our events is just proving physically to people that we are good at what we do on a ground level. And they look at us and go, we want you to come play at this thing or that thing or whatever, you know. And that's how we get gigs.
And apparently, I was chatting to Johnny Clegg before his demise about how much of his work became much smaller.
Mm.
The small concerts were where he was actually making lots of headway because of the merchandise he was selling.
Yes,
do you have merchandise?
No, we don't. We did have some. We're looking to release a few more songs this year and hopefully have an EP out. Or an album, depending on how what
I think it's important.
It goes.
I think people want
hand
to
in
buy.
Hand.
Yeah, because if you've had a good experience, you want to take it away.
I agree with you completely.
So that's a good idea.
Yeah,
but generally speaking, the kickstands has been around for how many years now?
About 13 years.
So it's not a flash in the pan.
No. No, it's not.
Is this what you're going to do for the rest of your...
I'll always perform music, absolutely. Yeah. I don't think it'll be my sole or one of my main revenue incomes in like 10 years or so. But I'll always perform. Until
that's who you are.
It's just, me, a guitar is a part of me, you know.
You love it. We're very blessed that it is like that, because you produce really fabulous music. And generally speaking, I've seen you in concert. It's been a vibe. Cool. You had a young female vocalist on stage with you in Belito a couple of years back.
Yes.
That always put in a kind of a third harmony. Or you did, it was on top of that.
It must have been Danny.
It was a very lovely sound. Maybe you incorporate. I'm sure that's the way it goes from time to time.
Yeah, so
bring in and augment the sound.
Exactly. It's flashy. We have Gemma Kate, who is also a phenomenal artist in Durban. She's going to be joining us for a few songs.
Oh, that's
on
great.
Stage.
So there's room to build
always,
up and
always. Yeah, we always collaborate. You know, we love doing that.
Well, I wish you huge success.
Thanks,
Dave. Splashy and beyond, and continued success with the Kickstands for many, many more years to come. And thank you so much for joining me on
Thanks for having
the Dave Charles Show. We're going to be playing out with a tune called Atlantic. What is that about?
Oh, that's one of my favorite songs I've written. That's a song about love lost between an ex of mine in Cape Town, and I was in KZN, but the essence of the song was quite heartbreaking at the time. But it's a beautiful song. I love it, yeah.
And here it is, the Kickstands with Atlantic.